Today is the third day on Mars for the rover Curiosity, which is sending back images of the planet to NASA. You can check them out at our website, hereandnow.org. While NASA scientists are pondering the mysteries of Mars, others have their heads in the cosmos. Take UC Berkeley astronomer Saul Perlmutter. Last October, he won the Nobel Prize in Physics, along with Brian Schmidt and Adam Riess, for using data from exploding stars, also known as supernovas, to show that the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate. That finding has led to speculation that our universe may contain something scientists call dark energy that's pushing stars apart. All very complex stuff, and in a galaxy far, far away from where we caught up with Saul Perlmutter one morning this spring.
I always think this thing's amazing. It's just a rotating drum with white lines painted on it. Then you pluck the strings, and then you can look and you can just see the waveforms.
That's the fast-talking Professor Perlmutter on a tour of San Francisco's Exploratorium. It attracts kids of all ages, and Perlmutter likes to take students from his UC Berkeley class in physics and music. They checked out the acoustics in a chamber that resembles the inside of a giant organ pipe. Here in Now's Emiko Tamagawa caught up with Saul Perlmutter outside the Exploratorium for her own science lesson. She began by asking him why he brought his students there.
For me, it's what every science museum should be, and maybe even, you know, every museum. I mean, the idea of a place where they really want people just to interact and play and try things out just seems to me the way, you know, you should approach the world. In my class, I try to do a number of these things, but of course, the Exploratorium has come up with these amazing ways of showing lots of ideas that otherwise, I don't think you'd ever get to do.
I think that's the thing, because physics, to a lot of people, is something that they can't really see or touch. It's, in fact, a subject that lots of people avoid, like the plague. So what are the things that you do to sort of make it approachable to people?
I think one of the problems for many people is that the math gets confused with the science and the approach to the world that you learn as a scientist. And so what I really am interested in is sharing and having a sense that everybody gets a chance to play the same way that we get to play with the world as scientists. And you don't need math to do that. You know, you can, you know, with sound, you actually get a chance to experience many of the things that you're talking about, but you can actually just feel them. And as you walk around the room, you can hear acoustics, you can hear what's going on with instruments when you pull and you know, stretch a string, or when you shorten a string. All those things are actually much more visceral and direct than the math itself. And in some ways, they help get at the kinds of questions of how you tell what it is that you know and what you don't know. For me, a lot of what science has to do with is recognizing the things that we're good at and the things we're bad at, and being able to catch ourselves making mistakes.
Do you remember when you were sort of first pulled by science, or was that something that you just, as long as you can remember?
As long as I can remember, I've always been someone who just wanted to know how everything worked. And I remember always feeling like it was a little shocking to me that we all lived in this world that worked so in such an organized way, that you sat on a chair and you didn't fall through, that gravity was pulling you down, not up. You know, it just felt to me like it's all so organized. Somebody should have given us the owner's manual. And how is it that we're all wandering around this world of ours and nobody's given us the rules of how it works? You know, so I always thought that we all needed to know that. And you know, as you get older, you start realizing that, okay, you actually do pretty well without really understanding how it works. And most people aren't as obsessed by knowing what the owner's manual is as I was and still have at times. But there is still a real pleasure in that sense of understanding, you know, what is it that's going on.
Can you explain very simply? You looked at supernovas to look at the nature of the universe. And this is the sort of thing that makes everyone go, huh?
Way back, you know, in the 1930s, we knew, actually Hubble had measured, that the universe was expanding. And ever since we knew that, we've wondered, well, is that going to go on forever, or is it slowing down? I mean, you might imagine that it would slow down because everything gravitationally attracts everything else. So we've always wondered about that. And it was only in the past few decades that we realized that actually you could go out and measure the answer to that question. And it was because we recognized that there was a type of those supernova called a type 1A supernova that you can recognize by its particular colors. It turns out to always be exploding about the same way. They brighten like a firework, and then they fade away in a few weeks. And at that peak brightness, they're always about the same brightness. And since they're the same brightness, you can measure how far away they are just by measuring how bright they are at peak. That tells you how far back in time that particular supernova exploded. And then the only other thing you want to know was, can we tell how much the universe has stretched since the time of that particular supernova's explosion? And it's very easy, because the supernova gives off most of its light looking blue. While the light travels to us, it gets stretched. That wavelength gets stretched just as the universe gets stretched. By the time it reaches us, it looks pretty red. And how red it looks tells you exactly how much the universe has stretched. And so what we did is found supernovae that were different brightnesses. That means different distances and different times back in history. And each of those different times back in history from each supernova, we looked at the color that the supernova, you know, had now been stretched to looking. And that tells you how much universe has stretched at each of these different times. We thought we were going to find out that it was slowing down. And, of course, the big surprise that we found was that the universe is actually speeding up.
Where are you exploring now?
What we're trying to do now is design a whole bunch of new experiments and new projects, including some more using supernova, that will allow us to make a very detailed measurement of how it was that the universe went from an early period in which it was slowing down to the current period in which it's speeding up. Or perhaps it's not another dark energy at all. Maybe it turns out that we actually need to change Einstein's theory of general relativity, Einstein's theory of gravity, might need a modification, which would be really amazing. I don't know which one's more amazing, that you know, you have to change Einstein's theory of general relativity, or that most of the universe, almost three quarters of the universe, is made out of a stuff that's this dark energy that we've never explored before.
So it still gets you as excited as it always does?
It's a great topic. It's a great set of projects. It makes you feel like we might be on to something really deep and fundamental about how the world works, how the universe works. There aren't that many times in history that you get to play with these kinds of deep fundamental ideas and perhaps get to the bottom of them by just making measurements.
Okay, I have to ask you the one stupid question. So how was it to actually get the call that, hi, Saul Perlmutter, you've won the Nobel Prize?
The funny thing was that, well, first of all, in California, it's the right place to win Nobel Prize, because you get the call in a very dramatic time of night. It comes about, you know, 2:45 in the morning. So, I woke up from a deep sleep, and as I reached over to pick up the phone, and the person on the other end said to me, you know, is this Saul Perlmutter? I said, yes. And they said, how do you feel? And I said, fine, thanks. Why do you ask? And they said, you know about the prize. And I said, well, I actually haven't heard about the prize. It turned out that the Nobel Foundation and the Swedish Academy, who were trying to reach me, had some wrong numbers for me. So it wasn't for an hour later that I actually got the official call. So my first calls were from some radio reporters from Sweden, and they actually ended up just looking it up in the phone book.
It was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I turned to my wife after getting off, managing to get off a string of phone calls, and realized that I couldn't answer the phone anymore. And it was now, 3 in the morning. And I said, well, I guess we're not going back to bed. And then within a matter of minutes, just within half an hour probably, there were all the television reporter trucks outside the house, with the bright lights, and the staff from the university showing up to try and manage everything. And anyway, it was just a fun day, because we ended up having a chance to celebrate with a lot of the other people who were involved in the project at the university. So it had a nice group feeling.
Yeah, but now you go back to work, so that's a good thing too.
Exactly. No, you wouldn't want to run around all the time, celebrating. Just Thursdays, afternoons.
Right. Saul Perlmutter, thank you so very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's fun.
That's UC Berkeley Professor Saul Perlmutter, co-winner of the 2011 Nobel Prize in Physics, speaking to Here Now's Emiko Tamagawa. They spoke at San Francisco's Exploratorium, where he likes to take his Berkeley students. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Please join us again here and now.